Today on Bread for the Broken with James Grizzle, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Galveston. Bread for the
broken. God, I really want this. No, I need that. And he's like, sounds like you really want it, right? Like, need, let's redefine the terms, okay? But there are definitely times where, man, there's just times where it's like, Lord, I need you. I need you right now. Like, you have to show up right now. That was me before the service started, when my brain is like, my head is like, I'm like, Jesus, you have to show up now.
Oftentimes, it can be difficult to distinguish between a need and a want when it's a moment of desperation. You might think that you need something really badly, but in reality, it's only something that you want badly. Today, Pastor James will remind you that our God is a provider. The Bible says that God will provide all that we need. He provides for the birds in the wild, so how much more will He care for you? Well, when you feel like you need something, examine it to be sure that it's a need, and then ask God for it. He'll provide for your needs. Now here's Pastor James in the book of Acts, chapter 17, with today's edition of Bread for the Broken.
We need bread for the broken. Give some bread to the broken. We need hope for the hopeless. Give some hope to the hopeless, hopeless. Bread for the broken, broken.
He's got it figured out. He's brilliant. He's got it. He doesn't need us, but he wants us. Doesn't need us, but he wants us. It says, for he himself has no needs. He himself gives life and breath to everything. He satisfies every need there is. So here's the incredible thing is Paul is just dropping this cool little message on these guys. He's like, he doesn't need us to do anything for him. In fact, he's willing to do and to give to us what we need. Paul would even say, my God shall supply all of your needs. You got needs? Here's the thing. You got a really good God who cares about those needs. And you can cry out to him at any moment in time and say, Lord, I need you. I need you. Now, oftentimes, we mistake a need for a want. God, I really want this. No, I need that. And he's like, sounds like you really want it, right? Like, need, let's redefine the terms, okay? But there are definitely times where, man, there's just times where it's like, Lord, I need you. I need you right now. Like, you have to show up right now. That was me before the service started, when my brain is like, my head is like, I'm like, Jesus, you have to show up now. You have to. You have to, because I won't be able to read when this thing sets in. And as a good shepherd, he comes alongside and says, I got you. I got you. He knows how to take care of our needs. Now, it would have been nice if that would have never happened. But that's not how it works. That's not how it works. Because if it never worked, I mean, if it always worked out that way, we wouldn't be crying out to him. We wouldn't be crying out to him. But he knows how to take care of our needs. He knows how to satisfy our needs. It says, from one man, he created all nations. So it's from Adam to Noah to you. And he knows how to set you up in the boundaries and who lives where and all this good stuff. It's a brilliant, beautiful plan by God. The different people and ethnicities and where they live and all that stuff. It is absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. And with skin pigmentation, some have more of it than others, and there's a reason for that, and it's so cool, and it's amazing, and it's just brilliant. We've been listening to Miles McPherson, and I don't know if you know Miles, but pastor at The Rock in San Diego, and he did this, he put out a book, and I'm halfway through it. It's really good. It's called The Third Option. Everybody should buy it and read it. Read it. It's amazing. But we've been watching as a family. We've started the first video of that, as he's sharing with the church, and he's just talking about, you know, for him, what it's like growing up and just trying to bring this third option of like, it's not us and then, you know, it's not we're picking this side or we're picking that side. No, we're picking Jesus's side. That's where we're coming from. And he talks about just the beauty of like, some people are born in the womb with a really nice tan. That's really cool. Some of us will pay money to go or to go spend time on the beach so we can get the darker skin. But the Lord, I mean, it's just beautiful how God has done it to where It's all just part of his creative ability. And we should celebrate that. We should absolutely celebrate that. It is amazing. It's the coolest thing ever. I'm just always reminded, I love art. I'm a big art kind of guy. I did a lot of art in school, and I just always think of God as he's just the most brilliant artist ever, whether it comes to human creation and different shapes and sizes and skin tone and you know, the way that we talk sometimes, even within our own nation, we have different like accents and all that good stuff. I don't have a good enough Texas one because people don't realize I'm from Texas, but born and raised, like, I think I need to say y'all more, I guess, but I just don't. But it's amazing how like this works. And it says there that he, you know, he's determined their boundaries. And it's just so brilliant of who he is. I had a friend in Bible college. She was the first person ever to convey this thought to me. We were going to, I believe it was Oceanside, could have been San Diego, but I think it was one of our trips where we go to Street Witness. So Oceanside, Camp Pendleton, you got a bunch of Marines out there and a bunch of nightlife happening out there, and it's just a fun place to go. And just walk up and down, you know, different the pier and wherever else and just share the gospel. But as we're going, and the drive from Murrieta, California to Oceanside, it's an incredible drive. It's just beautiful. There's hills everywhere, and at this point in time, the hills, which they're, you know, we should be praying for our friends in California, Oregon, Washington, all over, because now it's just blood red over there, but the hills were green, and the sun was setting out there over the Pacific Ocean, and through the hills and all this stuff, and we're just driving out, and she said, she's like, isn't God just the most brilliant artist? And I was like, what? And I just got saved. But I was like, what? And she's like, look at this beautiful sunset he just painted. And every day he shows up to paint us a new sunrise, and then he paints us a new sunset. She's like, isn't he the best? I'm like, I've never thought of that before. He is. It's amazing. And man, what a cool thing. And this is Paul's just sharing with these guys. He's like, look, man, he's created it all, and he's created us, and he set up boundaries. And so you probably live where you live because maybe that's where the Lord wants you to live, right? So you can trust in that. You can trust that he's got you there for a reason and all this good stuff. He goes on to say what the purpose is, though, verse 27. In his purpose in all this was that the nation should seek after him. They should seek after God. And perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. Though he is not far from any one of us. That's like the most beautiful little phrase. Paul's like, look, he's done all this stuff. What's the purpose of existence? Why are you here? You're here to fall in love with Jesus and to worship God. That's why you're on this planet. Now, with that, you got a job to do if you're a Christ follower. You go and tell people about him. And you say, look, are you looking for purpose in your life? If you're looking for purpose in your life, I can show you where that's at. That's found in Jesus. And this is what Paul's saying to the smartest people on the planet at this point in time. He's saying, look, God has done all this stuff so that you would fall in love with him, so that you would worship him. So that the nations would seek after God and perhaps feel their way. The idea there is it's kind of like grasping blindly. Now, what Paul is not saying here is that it's up to you to discover who God is, to find God. You don't find God, okay? Number one, he's not lost, okay? He's not lost. He's never been lost. And he's not playing a game of hide and seek with you or with unbelievers. That's not how God works. In fact, that's what we do. We like to hide from him, okay? Adam and Eve showed us how to do that. The first game ever of hide and seek was in the garden when they sinned, okay? And God's like, I don't know if you realize who I am, but I know where you're at, okay? So it's not that he's put this up so that, you know, we gotta like just drag ourselves and search around blindly to try to discover who God is. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying there is like, look, he set all this stuff up so that we would fall in love with him. And he says, he is not far from any of us. He's a God who is near. He is the God who is near. So he's not like some of the thought process, some of the philosophies of the day back then, where it's that, you know, yeah, maybe there is a God who exists, but he is far off. He's not, he doesn't get involved in human, you know, relations, so to speak. He has no concern with what's happening here on this planet that he has created in some form or fashion. He set everything up and then backed away. That's still a prevalent, you know, prevalent thought today. That, yeah, there might be a God who exists, but he's not really concerned about us. And Paul says, no, no, he's the God who is near. He's closer than what you think. He's closer than what you realize. This is a good word of encouragement for, hopefully for non-believers. This is a good word for us as believers. He's the God who is near. When it feels as though he is distant, he's the God who is near. He doesn't change. He doesn't change. And let me reframe your thinking on one little concept, okay? Because there is this notion of like, and it's true to a certain extent, where it's like if it feels like, you know, that God is distant or that, you know, whatever, it more than likely it's because you've grown distant from him. I know what they're saying, I get it, but I don't really 100% agree with that. I just can't. Because he's a God who's not far from any of us. And I believe, when I'm a knucklehead, okay, which is not uncommon, when I'm a knucklehead and I am going this direction away from him, away from him, away from him, we, in our brains, we think that, well, he was over here and he just stays over here and he's like, well, when are you going to come back? I think that being an omnipresent God, he's still near. So I want to kind of take away that thought process of like, man, I just drifted far away from God. You can't drift far away from God. He is the God who is near. Okay, now quit being a knucklehead, right? Stop doing what you're doing and turn to him. That's called repentance. Run back to him, like that beautiful little story in the Gospel of Luke where you had the prodigal son and the dad who was like, the dad who was what? He was chasing down his son. He's the God who's near. He's near, he's close to the brokenhearted. He's the good shepherd who will chase after that one sheep who is off doing whatever he shouldn't be doing. He's the God who's near. Please never forget that. And you may be, and you know, maybe you're backslidden and all that stuff, and you're kind of like, you feel as though you're drifting away from God. I need you to understand this concept. He is right there. And you can always just stop and just turn. And it's not like you got to turn and now I got to work my way all the way back here. That's a false idea. That's a works mentality. The moment you stop and you turn and say, Lord, I am sorry, boom, he's right there in your face, ready to embrace you. He's a God who's near. It's good for these guys. It's good for us. It's probably good for people within your family. It's probably a good word for people that you're friends with who feel like, man, God will never welcome me back. He'll never take me back. I've gone too far. And you get to show up in their lives and say, no, 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 no. He's still near. He's still close to you. You just got to turn around, right? That 80 song's playing in your head right now, turn around, right? Anybody? No? Just me? Okay, I'm weird. I get it. My kids and I watch a lot of 80s music videos, so... I don't know what the name of that song is, but it's just ringing in my ears right now. Turn around. There you go. Now that I've lost you, or at least I've lost myself, I should probably get back to this. Okay, verse 28. It says, for in him we live and move and exist. As one of your own poets says, we are his offspring. This is really cool that he quotes these guys, Epimenides and Aratus. Okay, these are two poets that Paul quotes to these guys. Okay, some people have issues with this. Like, why would you quote a secular person in your sermon? Paul's like, well, because it's true. Well, because that illustrates what I'm talking about. It's not bad. It's not wrong. And Paul gets bashed a lot for Acts chapter 17. He gets beat up a lot for this because a lot of people say like, oh, no, so you didn't do it like this and this. And we have 1 Corinthians where you said, I desire to preach nothing, proclaim nothing to you but Christ and him crucified. Well, why didn't you do it in Acts chapter 17 on Mars Hill, Paul? And he's like, well, I was trying to. They shut me off. There's nothing wrong with him quoting from these poets. In fact, I wrote down this little quote here as he's talking about this. He quotes them because he uses these specific words because they reflected a biblical truth. What he was doing was building a bridge. He was building a bridge. You can do that. Talk to people. Maybe a song lyric comes up in your head, and maybe it's, you know, from whoever, some artist from the past. Turn around, whoever sang that song, whatever that song is, you're like, yeah, I'm singing about this song. And you can use that to build a bridge, to build a bridge. It's fine. It's okay. It's all right. That's not the majority of his message. His message wasn't built upon what these poets said. He just used what they said to add a little seasoning to the sermon. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. Goes on to say, as he quoted to them from their own poets, it says, and since this is true, we shouldn't think of God as an idol designed by craftsmen from gold or silver or stone. Like, you can't make God, okay? You can't make God. Gold or silver or stone. It says, verse 30, God overlooked people's former ignorance about these things, but now he commands everyone everywhere to turn away from idols and to turn to him. The days of ignorance, gone. Gone. It's like, okay, I understand that for a certain time. All this, you know, all that. He can overlook those things. But Paul is revealing to them who this unknown God is. And now, because of that, it is time to repent. Verse 31, for he has set a day for judgment, or for judging the world with justice by the man he has appointed, that's Jesus, and he proved to everyone who this is by raising him from the dead, and that's where he lost him. He's like, look, you made this altar, this thing, it's to the unknown God, and now I'm proclaiming to you who that God is, so now your time of ignorance is done. Now you're accountable. So I revealed to you who the unknown God is. So now you're accountable to handle that, to deal with that information. So what are you going to do? And he goes on to talk about, listen, here's why you need to deal with this. Because judgment's coming. Judgment's coming. And it's coming in the form of Jesus, because Jesus is coming back. He died. He died on the cross. He was buried in that tomb. For 3 days, he rose from the dead. God raised him from the dead. And it was at that notion, the resurrection of the dead, they just shut off. They turned off. It says, when they heard, verse 32, when they heard Paul speak of the resurrection of a person who had been dead, some laughed, but others said, we want to hear more about this later. That ended Paul's discussion with them. But some joined him and became believers. Among them were Dionysus, a member of that council. So that was kind of cool. Somebody that was sitting there heard and got saved. That's really cool. That's valuable. Another was a woman named Damaris. And it says, and others. So I have a hard time when people say that this is a failure. I have a difficult time. And there's people that I love dearly, pastors that I love dearly. And I can read through their commentaries and they say like, yeah, it's kind of a failure. And I'm like, how? And it's wrong of us, I think it's wrong of us to judge Paul by this message and its results. I think it's wrong to judge any pastor by the results of his message. Okay? I'd be like, well, you know, everybody didn't come forward to receive the Lord. Yeah, well, okay. Well, who's doing that? Like, that's, number one, we're keeping this thing within human understanding and realms. The Lord is moving. And the Lord obviously moved through this message because people got saved. Well, where's the church? He didn't plant a church. So? Did people get saved? Yeah. So Paul didn't plant a church in Athens. Okay. Okay. Maybe that's okay. That's not what the Lord wanted at that time. None of us know. We don't know. What do we know? Paul was faithful. He was faithful. And as he went to this town called Athens, he observed this community in which he was staying in because of necessity, and he noted how they lived their lives and how religious they were and all these different things. He took note of these things, and then when the opportunity came, when the Lord opened up the opportunity for him to talk to them, to share with them, he shared the gospel with them. And that gained him an audience with the leaders of that city. And even as he's sharing the gospel, and he's getting like right to the heart of the message, the meat of it, they're like, no more. And some of them were like, we want to hear more about this later. Did he get to share with them later? It doesn't say. But the word went out. People got saved. People in the marketplace, more than likely, the whosoever that just happened to be there probably gave their lives to Jesus. You have this one main leader there, however you say this guy's name, he gets saved. That's planting seeds. That's going to have an impact for when Paul leaves Athens. We got to stop. And I'm speaking about for myself and my little group that I get to run around in, and that's called pastors. We have this tendency to judge everything by numbers and turnout and hands raised and people coming forward and all this stuff, and it is just nonsensical. Who are we? Who are we to judge that? None of us, including myself, none of us who stand behind a pulpit and proclaim the word of God have any clue as to what the Lord's doing in the hearts of the people who show up. You could be here today and you're like, holy cow, have you been reading my mail? How'd you know that was going on in my life? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. Most of the time I walk off the stage and I'm like, I feel like a failure. And then people come to me and be like, that's the greatest thing I've ever heard. And I'm like, are you serious? Did you hear what I thought I was hearing? Because it was, ugh. Go find somebody else to listen to. Like, that's usually how I feel. We have no idea what's going on. We have no clue. So we got to stop. We got to stop. Well, this church isn't that big. This church doesn't. Who cares? The church belongs to the Lord. Paul was a missionary on a mission to share the gospel, and he did it faithfully. That's what matters. I do not believe at all for one second that when Paul walked through those pearly gates, so to speak, that God's like, hey, dude, you did a really good job, but we really need to talk about Acts chapter 17. Athens. He's like, you didn't do a good job. No, that's not it at all. He's like, well done. Good job. Way to represent. Didn't get a lot of results. Doesn't matter. What matters? Obedience and faithfulness. That's what matters. Okay? This is a God who is near. He is near to you and I. He's near. He will never leave you nor forsake you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Even when you're being a knucklehead and you're running away from him, he will never leave you. He will never forsake you. He is the God who is near. So realize that, embrace that, turn around. If there's something, turn around and just let him embrace you and stay faithful. Stay on a mission. And just, man, have a blast living on this planet while you're here because you serve Jesus. And let people see that. Let people see that.
Hope, the hopeless, hopeless, pray for the broken.
You've been listening to another edition of Bread for the Broken with Pastor James Grizzle. We're so glad that you joined us as we learned about the early church in the book of Acts together. What an incredibly powerful book of God's faithfulness. If you'd like to listen to today's teaching again or hear more teachings from Pastor James, visit breadforthebroken.com and click on the Teachings tab. While you're there, you'll also be able to learn more about the church behind this ministry, Calvary Chapel Galveston. If you're ever in the Galveston area, we would love to have you visit. We meet each Sunday at 10 a.m. and Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. for worship and Bible study. Our atmosphere is pretty relaxed, so we invite you to come just as you are. For directions and to learn more about us, just visit breadforthebroken.com. We would also love to connect with you. Just drop us a note in the contact form to let us know if you've been blessed by this ministry. Would you also prayerfully consider partnering with us in this ministry? Support from people like you allows us to share the gospel in unique and amazing ways. If you'd like to donate, visit breadforthebroken.com and click on the donations tab. Any and all donations are welcome and greatly appreciated. We thank you in advance for your generosity in partnering with what God is doing. Our website one more time is breadforthebroken.com. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but be sure to tune in again next time as Pastor James teaches more from the book of Acts right here on Bread for the Broken.
Let me paint the picture of you.